kids, it's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. Joining as usual, Cole, how are you doing?
I'm okay.
Okay? I was waiting for more.
I am okay. At this point, this is about where we're going to be. I haven't left the house in 4 weeks, except for one time when we went to the lake and had a picnic and then came right back home. So, I'm a little stir crazy.
Yeah. So am I.
The walls are crawling, I think, and I like the house is on a lazy Susan spinning around. And
yeah, but you subbed to us for another month, so thanks for that.
I am, you know, if I'm gonna make bad decisions, now's the time to do it.
I'm going so stir crazy. I'm hearing voices. It's like Chris Taylor's here.
Oh, hello.
And so is Pernell Vaughn. How's everyone doing?
I didn't know I had a voice, but I'm doing adequately.
Can we take it away?
No. He's doing pretty good for someone with no voice.
Exactly. And I'm here to stay to let you know a ramble, ramble, ramble.
Did you just do the "my name's Pernell and I'm here to say" rap? But in like a slightly different way.
It depends. Did you like it?
No.
My name's Pernell and I'm here to say I like video games in a major way.
I sure did. Cole's like, I didn't like it. No, I know I did it.
I said legally I'm not allowed to not like it.
And then see, exactly. You got it, man.
I don't give a fuck about legalities. It was garbage. Say you're sorry.
I will never apologize. I was about to, and then I realized how much you hate it.
Can't be friends with you anymore.
You want to know even something worse? You want to know something else? Sure. I don't know why kids like the taste of Cinnamon Toast Crunch. It just doesn't make sense
sugar.
To me.
Sugar. Sugar and cinnamon.
Is that what it is? Is that what it's been this whole time?
Lots of sugar. Yeah.
That's, I thought it was cocaine.
That too. Sugar? Yeah.
I mean,
might as well be cocaine for her kids.
It definitely seemed like that in the 80s because, you know, they've reduced the sugar since I was a kid. It used to be absolutely coated in this stuff. And now it's just like when I eat it now, I'm like, it's like somebody came through and licked all the sugar off at one point.
Really? I still have Cinnamon Toast Crunch, and I'll get to the bottom of the bowl, and it's just like sugar water, and I can't do it.
But I swear there's less sugar. Like, they even say it on the box that it's reduced sugar.
Probably.
Yeah, a lot of them have definitely reduced the content of the stuff specifically because they're trying to tap that whole market of, look, we're better than this now. Look at us.
Do you remember when the government forced cereal makers to make cereal cheaper?
No.
I do not remember that.
That happened about 20, 23 years ago. Like, cereals were getting to where there was like $6 a box or something like that. And like the government literally stepped in and was like, y'all got to stop this.
Did not know that.
They can actually do that. You know, if we vote for people that will do that.
Yeah, we have the wrong people in right now.
Oh, that's very true.
We got Cinnamon Toast Crunch monsters.
We got cookie crooks up in here. You remember the cookie crooks?
Let's be honest. If we had Chip the Dog and or Cookie Crook involved in there, I'd actually be okay with it. Because at least they'd be stealing cookies.
I wonder what happened to the cookie crook. I know what happened to the cookie cop. We just don't do Irish stereotypes anymore.
Yeah, for a while, they did just outright get rid of him. And it was just the dog.
The crook and the dog. Yeah, the crook and the dog. And then, I was just going to say, then it became just the dog, and he had no context. He had no reason. It would be like if a game came out that just had Waluigi in it.
I think what happened was eventually Cookie Crook was captured by the cop, and since he fulfilled his life's duty, his life's goal, he retired from the force.
He was one day from retirement, yeah.
Yeah, he just retired, which then left the dog with nothing else to do, so the dog just was like, well, apparently, dogs are immune to this case. I don't have to be a criminal anymore. I can just eat the damn cereal. So he just started eating it on his own time.
Well, I caught the only crook in town, and he only wanted cookies, so I'm going to retire now.
Gord, blimey. And everyone lived happily ever after, except he's rotting in jail right now.
Hanging up a mustache comb.
He's just sitting in prison.
And Michelaley.
Did you say Michelaley?
And Michelaley.
Oh, mercy. Yeah, see, I love this. This is what I'm all about. I live for freaking serial lore. There it is. And I'm not even ashamed to say it. I live for serial lore.
Welcome to the SML podcast, where we discuss serial and serial lore of times past.
As we should. I feel like I've even mentioned it on the show before, but there was like a comic that I read years ago where somebody sat down and like took all the different serial mascots and put them like in this weird fairy tale land. But it was a very serious narrative, like Count Chocula was an evil monster and his henchman was Frankenberry. And Blueberry was kind of a turncoat to the fruit monsters. And the leader of the other end of the spectrum was Captain Crunch and Tony the Tiger. And Tony the Tiger had a roids problem. And when he would hit him too hard, he would go to that whole "they're great" thing. And he would just like snap out. And it was like, it was a very, very violent, dramatic comic.
Of course.
It was amazing. It was
those
so
gritty reboots, man. Gritty reboots were such a thing. I think like it was gritty reboots, and now it's like going completely in the opposite direction where they're taking like stuff that used to be serious and like making it all like smaller and goofier. Like the new Thundercats and like She-Ra.
God, I'll never understand the Thundercats reboot. That one was just baffling to me.
I can't do Rankin Bass stuff through a different lens. It has to be the Rankin Bass stuff, or I can't do it.
I don't know what they were thinking about. I was like, you know, it would be great. What if Wile E. Kit and Wile E. Cat were just really baffling looking, and we just made it so that Lion-O's arms were very stubbish, and his legs were stubby too. The sword can look the same, but everyone looks like someone out of a Genndy Tartakovsky cartoon, because that means, like, come on, man. Why don't you just make a new cartoon at this point? Call them like Thunder Kittens. They're all Thunder in grade school now. Lionel's in high school. Oh, God, I hope he can ask Chitara out. I would have been all right with that. That would have made sense. But no, they had to do the same show, only wilder or something. They screwed the pooch. Screwed it royally.
This is a weird episode.
Yeah, I like it.
Weird is great. Got to embrace
disappeared.
The weird.
Where did she go?
I'm here, but I totally phased out of this conversation.
You can't phase out. Sim, solid bim, phase in.
I just like my eyes glossed over and I was thinky.
I'm just over here playing like one of the games I'm reviewing because I'm hoping to unlock another character by the end of the episode.
Oh, God.
Oh, you're reviewing Inan's cast character unlocks in it?
Two of the games that I'm reviewing have character unlocks in it.
Ooh.
Should we get into the reviews? We got a couple to take care of. Should we dive into these?
Yeah.
Well, it depends. Are any of them cereal related?
No.
Let's talk about cereal.
First game to talk about tonight is called Billion Road, developed by Bandai Namco, published by Actil, released April 16th on the Switch and PC for $39.99. Billion Road takes you on a journey to a number of real-life prefectures and cities throughout Japan, and your goal is to be the richest player in the game. Up to four players can compete locally and online, take over all of Japan, and dominate the business world like a tycoon. Chris, tell us about Billion Road.
Like a tycoon. Well, all right. So Billion Road is a board game capitalism simulator. Now, of course, you're going to think immediately, oh, it's just Monopoly with, like, different stuff. It's actually different, which is good because I hate Monopoly. it actually plays closest to a game that, that I don't know how many people have played. And, you know, because I like to compare games that I just reviewed with like super obscure games that nobody's played and then leave it at that. I know that's a habit of mine, but I'm still going to say that there's a game out there for the Wii and the DS called Dokipon Kingdom.
Mm-hmm. Got it. I love
it. Yeah. I know. I love that game. It's my favorite board game translated to video game, which is kind of like, you know, it's an RPG board game hybrid. Well, like that one. This one has you competing with up to four characters. Either you could play against one, two, or three computer players at difficulty varying difficulties that you get to set. You can play against up to, you know, three other players for, you know, a total of four players, either sharing the same controller, using different controllers, or you can actually remote play with somebody else who has Steam and a copy of the game. I actually tried it with somebody who doesn't have a copy of the game, and it didn't work. Yeah, I know. And, you know, of course, I couldn't play it with somebody else who has a copy of the game because it's not out yet. So,
or it wasn't when we reviewed it. So,
yeah, exactly. At this time of recording, it is not out. Also, my cat decided this is the time to start yelling. He was so good up to this point. Yeah, Wilfred. Anyways, so it has you with your other characters starting on a spot on a board, and the board branches out into all kinds of directions that encompass this kind of small scale version of the country of Japan, like the entire country is represented. And you start off somewhere in the middle, and basically you roll a dice, either a single dice, or you can use an item to get more die. And it tells you how many places you can move, and you can move out into any direction along, you know, the path. And where you land, of course, is going to determine what, you know, the next thing is going to happen. It could be a plus. If you get on a plus, then it just straight up hands you money on a little roller, like a, you know, like just a The Price is Right thing, right? You know, like the and it just gives you, it adds a random, yeah, it adds a random amount of money to your stuff. There's also a minus, you know, thing that does the opposite, takes away some of your money. You can land on a property which will bring up a list of, you know, different businesses that are kind of in that sort of block. And you can go down the list and purchase these properties or purchase these businesses. And it tells you kind of what the return is on them. And every year you get, you know, that basically adds it to like this this bank that is like an untouchable thing. It's like it's not money you can lose. If you own property, then you have that much worth. And the idea is to try and get as much combined actual money on hand and worth by the end of the time that the game goes. So, and you know, like every March, it actually, you get your return on all those businesses you own, and that gets added to your actual money and, that you can spend. And so, but like instead of being a Monopoly style where if somebody else lands on those businesses, they take a penalty or something like that, it's not like that at all. It's that they can also purchase stuff, just nothing that you've already purchased. And the list goes super high. Like, we'll start off at like 10 million yen for a small amount, which your characters might start with like 10 million yen in a regular game. Or if you're playing a shorter game, sometimes they'll start you off with 100 million. But your goal is to have billions and billions and billions. So that's not really a huge amount of money comparatively in the game. So like, you know, some of the stuff's going to be prohibitively expensive. So you can't just like purchase up everything immediately. You kind of have to like revisit spots and all this other stuff. But like Dokapon Kingdom, the game assigns one of the locations as a goal. And if you can reach that goal before everybody else, then you get massive bonuses. And it kind of like, you know, it kind of refreshes things a little bit in a way that I'll explain in just a moment. So as you travel around these like, you know, properties and try to get to the goal and get your pluses. You can also purchase items that will help you out or will screw over your friends, which of course screwing over your friends is a thing you can do. Nice. The other, yeah, of course, but it's not as bad as Dokapon Kingdom on that. This is not quite the same friendship ruining level of bastardry that goes on.
You're shibbed.
Oh yeah, Dokapon will get you murdered straight up if you pick the wrong people to play with or if you're just too good at it. Yeah. And, but yeah, there's another aspect of this one, and that is monsters. So, but instead of it being about fighting monsters like Dokapon Kingdom, it is actually about collecting monsters, good or bad. So if there's a monster on the board, if you cross its path at any point, then it will kind of attach itself to your party, and its effect will then, be an effect on you for the rest of the, until somebody reaches the goal, if it's depending on what kind of monster it is. So some monsters are just straight up bonuses. So like a blue monster, a blue bear, which is a you know, this cute little teddy bear that's colored blue. If you land on a plus sign with that bear in your party, he doubles the amount of whatever money you roll. And, you know, by the same token, there's also a raspberry, which is a red bear. And if you land on a minus, it will have the amount of money that it takes away from you. So it reduces the penalty. So you want both of these guys in your party. You can have up to three monsters. And if you get another monster, you have the choice of like dismissing one of your monsters. So you get to kind of pick, you know, play around with your characters a little bit here. And then there's, like I said, the benevolent, like bigger monsters who also can be nemesis, a nemesi, whatever. Like for my game, I got an egg monster, a happy egg, which every single time I moved my character, that egg would give me some kind of bonus. It would either drop a random item into my inventory. It would give me a monster egg, which if you hatch a monster egg, it gives you a random monster that you can choose to have in your party if you like. Just a great little guy, because I was ahead. Now, my opponent, whoever, like, got the, and this happens every time you reach a goal, is that you might get a benevolent monster, and your opponent, one of your opponents might end up getting a really bad monster as a punishment for not reaching the goal, or being the furthest away from the goal, is what they say. And my poor guy, I picked the easiest opponent, which is the spoiled kid, whose daddy is rich, and so this little kid thinks he's gonna get rich too, and... man, I destroyed that kid. he got
that kid's ass.
He got one of my favorite video game characters, the debt demon. It's a little goblin that like follows you around, and this goblin's really in debt, but he says things like, "I'm in debt right now, but I'll work real hard." And every time spoiled kid moved, the little debt demon would go, "Oh, by the way, I need to borrow a bunch of money. Oh, I'm going to sell one." And they'll be like, "Oh, I get to sell one of your businesses to make ends meet." And like the kid would either lose a ton of money or lose a business that he had purchased every single turn. And it was just devastating. And
I feel like the game won't be as good because your voice isn't in it.
There are no voices in it, sadly. But yeah, no, like the debt demon was terrible. But as soon as somebody hit another goal, then he went away. So, you know, you could definitely, like, you know, change your fortunes for sure. Not as extremely as some other games, but you definitely can climb back out of whatever hole you're in. But yeah, like, you know, that's kind of just how the game plays out. It's that, like I said, you know, every time everybody gets to go, another month passes, and then every time a year passes, then everybody gets their reward for, you know, what they've done. Every time somebody reaches a goal, it kind of it hands out awards and different things like that. And, you know, even players who aren't like super ahead can still get awards, and that might actually turn the tide in their favor. So, you know, it's a game that it's as fair as capitalism gets, let's call it. I really think that it's like super fun to play, like, you know, whether you're destroying the computer or if you're like playing with other people. Like, it's not quite as knife in the backy as Dokupon. And the other thing I just really like about it, like, the music's really fun and funky, the colors are just so bright and beautiful, and the whole thing is framed as this like Japanese game show, and it just like, it very much has that overly excited vibe, and like the characters are just so like fun and colorful, and yeah, it's just like it's a fun game to play. And like I said, it plays like one of my favorite video games that also incorporates a board game. So I really didn't find anything to complain about on this thing.
Well, Pernell, I know you were interested in this one. Do you have any questions?
I'm not sure. Only thing I really had in mind was, how long would you say a match seemed like it would take? Does matches kind of run like an hour? Or?
That is a good question. Okay, so I mentioned that every time every player plays, it's a month, and then 12 months makes a year. You get to decide right at the beginning of the game how many years you're going to play. Nah. So you can set it from 1 to 99.
Oh, God.
Then it has... And then it has different modes. Like, it has a, I forget what it's called, but it's like, it's basically a fast game mode, like a frantic mode, where you start off with a whole bunch of money and you only get to play for 3 years. So you just try to, like, it says, you know, you basically have enough money to play the way you want to play it, and then, you know, try and do the, you know, be the richest by the end based on whatever strategy. And then there's a tournament style, which is also set at 30 years, but every 5 years, whoever is at the bottom gets cut out.
Oh, so, elimination mode.
Wow. An elimination mode, yeah. And you can either play that with your human players or with computer players. Obviously, this one's meant to be with human players. And if they get dropped out, they get replaced with a random computer-generated character. And I say random character because you do choose the difficulty, but it's through choosing different characters. So, like, for instance, like when you're choosing... and by the way, two of them are locked away, so I don't know how to unlock them, but there's locked away harder characters. So like you start off with like a spoiled kid is like a level 5, and then like you go up the line to like different archetypes, up to Money Ninja, who is a ninja in a business suit. Yeah. And he's like level 50 or 60 or something. And he's much more crafty. And yeah, so they can be as short as you like. Like 1 year goes by in about 10 minutes or less. And that obviously wouldn't be very fun, but some of them are only 3 years long. So yeah, it's very variable.
Awesome. So overall $40 on this one. What do you think?
I think definitely. Now, you know, of course, caveats, if you're just going to play it by yourself, it is a board game. So, you know, you have to kind of figure out for yourself whether that's going to be much fun. I loved Dokupon Journey as a one player experience, but there's very few board games I would play as a single player, although the computer is challenging when you let it be. If you are playing with multiple people on a console, or like I said, sharing, you know, 4 players, 1 controller on your computer, it's absolutely worth it. It's a great party game. And, you know, I would definitely say that. If you're planning on playing with your friends online, just know that everybody has to have a copy. So that might be a little more prohibitive. So it really depends on how you're planning on playing it. But based on its quality, it is a $40 game and it's very good. So I'd say go for it.
Awesome. Sounds good.
Yeah.
All right, next game is called Brave Land Trilogy, developed by Tortuga Team, published by A Lotta Games, released April 10th on Xbox One for $14.99. Brave Land Trilogy is a turn-based game inspired by old-school strategies with hexagonal battlefield. The story will take place in a hand-drawn world and cover many interesting places and characters. Various warriors will join your army, archers, scouts, healers, footmen, and more. Purnell, tell us about Brave Land Trilogy.
Brave Land Trilogy is, I guess, one will consider to be a game designed to kind of scratch your itch for one second. Oh, man, that was a sneeze. Anyway, back to basics here. It's a tactics RPG style game for people who just kind of want like that quick fix hit, because it never gets too complicated. It's kind of like just right. So what I mean by that is, well, I'll get into that as I explain the game. So Brave Land Trilogy is actually 3 games in 1, though each game has minor differences. So for the most part, if you play one of them, you get the general gist of how all 3 of them work, just with some subtle differences. And let's start with the very first one. There are 3 characters. There's a warrior you can play as, the ice mage, and a pirate. The warrior is the easiest one to discuss, and I'll just kind of branch out from there. So the general concept of the game is you start out on there's a map, like a node-based map, where you go from node to node, and each node will have an event of some sort on it. The game, for the most part, goes from left to right. Like, there will be multiple nodes on one screen, but ultimately, as you progress, you'll go further to the right, and the screen will scroll to the right until you get to the end of your character's adventure. Now, the character that you play as isn't exactly the character that you control in combat. As you go across the map, you'll occasionally come across characters on some of the nodes, like you mentioned, the aforementioned healer or the footman or the farmer or whatever. And when you meet them, they'll have some way, like a narrative to say, hey, those bandits stole your crops. Want me to help you get them back? Sure. And then the farmers will join your party. And what ends up happening there is that each character type you get is represented as 1 unit on your map when you go into a battle, of which each battle is just like a series. Like I said, let's just come up with like a, say, 8 by 7. I don't even remember the exact dimensions, but it's the same dimensions for every battle, like 8 across by 7 down. And each unit you get is actually just 1 but the enemy units are stacked on top of it. Think like how Advanced Wars would play, where if you have a troop, it's got a hit point rating of 10, and you move that one unit across the map. It's just like that in this game. So a farmer will be 5 units or 4 units or whatever. Now, the higher the amount of that type of character you have on the unit, the more damage is capable of doing. And that's also how many hit point bars that unit has. So if you're walking around with a farmer unit of 4 and it gets into a battle, it takes damage. Okay, the health bar got knocked down by half. Takes damage again. Now you've got 3 farmers on that unit. And that's pretty much how you deal with it. So combat will involve having individual unit types of a certain quantity representing on them that determines how long they have to live and also how much power they can deal. And you're trying to keep them as alive as possible. They each have different attack power, different movement ranges, and the idea of, like, you know, just like ranged attack versus up close attack. And then they each can get one extra ability. Sometimes they start with one. Sometimes you find it as you're progressing across the map. You can buy it at one of the nodes, which may have a little quick store on it. And then you can, like, purchase the ability so them to use in combat. And when you use the ability, you always start the battle with it active. But once you use it, you have to go a few rounds before you can charge it back up. Just like a typical tactics RPG or adventure game where you have, like, special attacks that need to have cooldowns. So battles themselves are never complicated. They're actually always quite simple. In fact, due to the way the maps are designed, like I said, always an 8x7 or so grid, maybe more than that. Let's just say 10x10. Straightforward number. Anyway, point is, every map has
4, 5, 6, 7 across 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7x7.
Oh, okay. Wow, that's even smaller than I was thinking. Okay, because what I was going to say was, like, they give you enough space on the board to actually have to cross it, but also it's so few that you don't really get involved much in, like, as far as, like, tactical unit placement. Like, if you play a usual strategy game, the maps are usually large, which means that you're traversing the map and you can position guys in anticipation of where your opponents may end up and stuff like that. You can flank guys. In this game, the map is so small and they designed the battles to be so kind of like quick and straightforward that there really is no flanking. It is, there are some bad guys. I got to kill those bad guys. So just send your guys to the right and attack the guys you think are the biggest threat and just hope you outlast them. And at the end of each skirmish, you get money based on the number of enemies you've killed. And for every unit that you lost, you lose some of that reward to resurrect them. So the goal is to kind of just knock enemies out as fast as possible while taking as little damage as possible so you can make the most bang for your buck. And what does money do in this game? Well, I mentioned earlier how the map is broken down into a bunch of nodes. Some of the nodes, when you stop on them, will allow you to buy new units. And as I shouldn't say new units, more like pads your current units. So you might have a swordsman, right? You have a swordsman unit of 2, which means he has like a power of 2 for that type of unit. But if you want to get more of that unit, you can buy them at a store that sells more units of that type. And you max out depending on how high your character's level is. As you level up, you can actually hold more units in your per type of unit. So you can't just, like, say, have enough money to buy like 12 farmers because the game's going to say, no, you can only hold 10 farmers until you've leveled up. But at the same time, money can be scarce depending on the character you're using too, because grinding isn't really a thing in this game. If you get into a battle and you win the battle, that battle's gone from the map. It doesn't come back. So when you come across shops and you have a certain amount of money, you have to realize that your money is finite. You better just choose what you want as best you can and not overdo it so that you can account for those things. Except for, like, sometimes where, like, there's like a dungeon map you can land on where if you go there, you can, like, go into a battle, but then I don't know what triggers the return of that battle, but it's not always available to you again. So it's, again, still not really grinding. It's just, here's a little extra cash if you need it. Let me think. Oh, so depending on the character that you're using, the thing that makes them all unique are two things. Three things. One is the type of units that you'll come across on your adventure, because different units join different party, different main characters. And while there are differences in them, like which special attacks the units get and whatnot, for the most part, they fall under the same archetypes. You have a ranged unit, you have a melee unit, you might get a healer, you might get another ranged attack who does magic damage. But for the most part, it's not complicated. It's not enough to make you go, whew, this is a really cool strategic setup I can get with this guy. It's like, no, you have a ranged guy and a melee guy. The next thing that makes them different is equipment, because while your main character doesn't actually fight in the battles, they do get equipment that when they wear it determines various buffs for your normal character. So you might equip a bow to your warrior, but all that bow does is make your archer units do 20% more damage. So you'll be getting equipment specifically tailored around improving your actual battle units. And the last thing that makes each of those characters, next thing that makes characters different is what you get for leveling them up. Sometimes you'll just have to choose between a stat improvement, like hit points, strength or defense. Other times you might get like a rudimentary skill tree where like say, okay, you want to spend these points to get, you know, more attack power on your archer unit, or do you want to have more magic power for your magic unit? You know, nothing too complicated, but just like enough to say, hey, I got a bit of a choice here. But that just specifically depends on which character you chose at the beginning of the game. And the last thing that makes them really different is the fact that they each get different attacks that you can kind of invoke in combat. So, like I said earlier, they don't actually fight with the units. They're just kind of you command units. But you might get an ability that wherever every couple of turns, it might say, hey, now that I have time, drop an ice arrow onto the field, and it does damage to these guys here, and then it just recharges over time based on the condition, and then you can use it again, and you'll gain more abilities throughout the course of the adventure for that character. So what you're pretty much getting out of this game is three quick narratives that aren't like, you're not going to go into this game and get jazzed for the plot. I'm just going to say that right now. I never at any point said, oh man, I can't wait to find the Bandit King. I hope this goes somewhere. I don't care. You're just going to play the game. And like I said, it feels like you're just getting a quick fix of, you know, turn-based battles. Now, the complication here is the fact that, of course, the Switch and Xbox, all of them. Xbox has a fair number, I want to say, of strategy RPGs, doesn't it? Would you say it does or no?
Not really. The Xbox isn't really the home for strategy games.
Oh, in that case, this is a good market for it then. Yeah. Because honestly, the only detriment I can really think of for this game is the competition that it could have. And off the top of my head, the only thing that came to mind was like Pit People. And honestly, Pit People would just be competitive on anything because it's freaking hilarious too. Mm-hmm. But, if there's not a lot of competition for it, I think it's a fun time to play. Like, I did enjoy it. I wasn't jazzed about the plot as I was progressing, but I did have very occasional moments. I was like, I want to fight one more guy. I want to just go across a little bit more, fight one more guy. So, in that regard,
it's always good when a game has that feeling of just one more battle. Just one more. One more.
And I think it's partly because of the thing that I earlier probably made sound like it was a bad thing, which is that the battles are never too complicated. It's basically your units are thrown on the board, move them over, and rock faces. Now, if it was a game where each battle was going to run me about like 20 minutes or something, yeah, I might not necessarily want to have just one more battle. I might be too tired and want to go to bed. But with this, I was okay with that because the battles were never too much of a time investment. And I mean, when you die, the penalty for death isn't even all that bad. So if anything, there isn't a penalty. I've had things, messages when Robert died, the game would say, your unit scrounged up money for you. Go do something with it. It's like, okay, well, shoot. Which means basically the game is almost saying, you lost this battle. Here's enough money to make your unit stronger, so maybe you'll win next time. Which isn't, really, again, not a bad thing. No. It's just the experience of just playing through it. And if you really want to get really into it, they have like a little bonus mode outside of the three characters where you can like a bit of a survival mode where they will give you a unit, a set of enemies you have to beat, and then they'll give you a bit of money. And you can take that money to purchase specific characters within like a option list that they give you. And then, okay, now that you've bought your units, see if you can survive these battles. And then you just kind of play through them to see how well you do. There's a versus mode too, but I didn't get to really do much with that. But the survival was enjoyable too.
And you got to point out the game is gorgeous. I love the visuals on this one.
I do like the little dotted eye character people. Like they kind of like they remind me of Weebles.
Oh, man. But overall, $15 on Braveland Trilogy. What are you thinking?
I think it's a decent try for sure. Like, again, if you're in it for a narrative, you're not going to really jump for joy at this. But if you just want that quick, I just want to have a battle with some unit types, just have fun with it. I think you'll have fun with it. I enjoyed it.
Awesome. All right. Next game to talk about is called Half Past Fate, developed by Serenity Forge, published by Way Down Deep. Released March 12th on Switch and Steam for $19.99. Love is in the air, but work, life, and spicy ramen keep getting in the way. From 8 hours to 8 years, this time-jumping saga will change the way you feel about Fate forever. Chris, tell us about Half Past Fate.
Man, I wish I had some spicy ramen. Amazing right now. I haven't had ramen since everybody got shut down. Okay, so Half Past Fate. This is an interesting take on what is essentially like the visual novel genre. It's mostly a visual novel, but some of it is a kind of almost fetch quest puzzle game. Not really. It's very hard to sell any other part of this game apart from its novel-esque-ness. So it is a 3D game where you walk around and talk to people, but there's basically it's just walking, you know, observing like and talking to as many people as you want, and then once you satisfy the goal of whatever that particular chapter is, it ends the chapter and does the next chapter. So the like, it basically, each chapter is about a different protagonist and how they, you know, I guess a, you know, How I Met Your Mother type scenario. Like, it just explains how they get into relationships that they get into and what happens along the way. So, you know, we're basically kind of dealing with like different couples, but you're always through the perspective of your playable character at the time. And of course, their stories eventually, like, you know, some of them overlap a little bit and things like that. And, you know, I won't go into like actual story stuff because that's the entire game. So I wouldn't give anything away. It's an interesting like art style. It's done completely in pixel art and very well done. Like, it's extremely well like animated. Like, you know, anything that can be animated is animated. And it's got this thing where it's a little bit like Octopath Traveler in the sense that it's flat, really detailed sprites moving around in 3D space. Mm. And so, you know, kind of like the super fancy paper cutouts kind of look.
Yeah.
But not like Paper Mario or anything, nothing like that obvious. Just like I said, it's presented a lot like Octopath Traveler, but without the 30, you know, 60% of the screen being blurry. they actually go for like these kind of mellow bluish and orangish, like, you know, nice looking lighting. Everything looks nice in this game. That's actually probably the overarching theme of this game is niceness. It is a romantic comedy, so it's not going to deal with anything too dramatic, nothing that can't be overcome. And it, you know, dialogue is lighthearted sometimes sometimes too lighthearted, like kind of, you kind of feel like sometimes that you'd wish that they'd say more with less words because there's so many words. And, but you know, like I said, there's mega fans of this genre. So I'm not going to criticize the writing too much just because it's not an RPG, you know, because RPGs deal with like extremes, but they have to convey it in like one or two sentences, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, this is a game that lets you slow down and take your time. And like I said, you basically just walk around and you can either talk to a person directly if it gives you that icon, or it might just give you an icon to observe them. And then you get to hear your character's thoughts on them. Like, you know, a young man thinking about an old couple that he sees and he wants a girlfriend so bad. So like every person he thinks about, he's like, ah, oh, they look so happy. I wish I was happy. You know, kind of things like that. That's not every character in the game. It's just that character. In fact, the second chapter, it's funny because the first chapter takes place largely in a coffee shop where the guy is trying to flirt with a barista, which is a terrible cliche that people should stop projecting out there, because it's the poor baristas are having to put up with this stuff in real life. But anyways, then the second chapter is about a girl who meets a guy while like going to like kind of a street side tea festival. Like, just all these booths with, like, different teas and stuff, and, like, she basically teaches him about tea and all this. And I was like, is this game about romance or about beverages? Because I've been getting 100% beverage content so far. But then Chapter 3 starts off, and it's about a lady who's a photographer, and, you know, it goes off in a different direction. And I was like, okay, fine. But, yeah, like, it made me very thirsty for tea, that's for sure. And that's the thing, you know, it actually is, it does suck you in a bit, like with the writing, like you actually do kind of get into it. And so I think if you do that, then it's actually really a fun read. But yeah, like I said, the interaction part is pretty low. Oftentimes what it amounts to is that there's some kind of item that you have to pick up. You have a very limited inventory system, like a point and click, like you basically can push the button to access everything in your inventory, and it's usually no more than one thing. And you just give it to some, you know, you push it in the right direction, and then it hands it over to the other person or something, and the story moves on. I wouldn't say it ever gets challenging. Sometimes you might be at a loss for what to do, and the game doesn't have a clue system or anything like that. You just kind of have to pay attention to context, essentially. But, like, I actually had a laugh because the only challenge in the first chapter is that you have to pick up some coffee cream.
That's hard, man.
Oh, and you have to loan somebody your phone, which is a flip phone, by the way. So I feel like this game takes place in different timelines or different like periods, like, you know, maybe weeks before, maybe some years before. And then, you know, I guess they all kind of connect at a certain point. But anyways, but yeah, like it looks gorgeous. The soundtrack is really nice. The songs are nice and lush. It's fun to listen to them. The writing's good. It's not going to change the world or anything like that, but it's it's as good as a romantic comedy. You know, there's one thing I guess I could have, you know, said, you know, thought about. It was like, you know, they got it presented all this, you know, they got it like presented this way. Maybe they could have written it to have more of a choice in the matter, but you're really just watching the game unfold. Like, you're not changing anything really. You're just kind of going with the script. And in that sense, it's nice and peaceful, and, you know, it will pass the time, but it's hardly substantial gameplay beyond that.
Well, at $20, what do you think of Half Past Fate?
Well, $20 seems to be the going rate for a visual novel, so I guess in that sense, it's a buy it for fans of the genre. I don't know what it presents that's any different. The main thing that I liked about it is that not one of the characters is a straight-up white American male, and I like that. There's a lot of diversity in the characters, although I believe, without having played through the entire game, I believe all the pairings are male and female, but that's, you know, what can you do? At the very least, there's different people, and they act comfortable in their surroundings. You know, there's not like this otherness about it. So I like that about it, and I think people should play it for that reason for sure. And again, that's rare in the visual novel genre. So I like that a lot. I like the aesthetics of it. But at the end of the day, yes, it's a visual novel with a little bit of a difference. And if you like that, it's a definite buy it.
Awesome. Sounds good.
Yeah.
All right, next game to talk about is called Rush Rover, developed by Radio, published by Rattleaka Games, released April 7th on PS4, 8th on the Xbox One, 10th on the Switch for $4.99. In the universe of Rush Rover, intelligent robots and mining exploration have spread over every known galaxy. After the War of Independence against humanity, these highly intelligent and powerful machines attempt to rule over everything, so they start hacking other robots. You control a clean mining rover, picking up weapons and rushing to survive. Cole, tell us about Rush Rover.
I didn't play this. Sorry, I just want to see how it felt to be Purnell.
It felt awesome, didn't it? Ooh. It felt great.
That instant silence was incredible.
The power.
You had me for a second. I'm like, oh shit, did I put the wrong game on the list?
She felt the power. The rush.
That shit down.
Joe was like, what?
Grumble, grumble. All right, so Rush Rover, for real. Tell us about Rush Rover.
Rush Rover, come on over.
Rush Rover is a, I guess you would call it pixel art. It's Yeah, it's pixel art. I'm going to settle on that. I don't know how many pixels. I don't know the difference between 8, 16 bit. I don't know. It's pixel art. And basically it is a twin stick roguelike where you have a lovely little robot. I'm sure there's reasons for why the robot is going through this, decrepit looking space station place. What the reasons are, I don't know. It's a Rattalaika game. Nobody paid that much attention to the story, and I don't even remember if there actually was that much story. I was just like, I just want to shoot things and be like, yeah, this is good. And I wasn't disappointed. Yeah. I mean, there's just an element to games like Rush Rover where you're like, I don't need the details. I'm just here to pew pew for a little bit. Yeah. And in that regard, it does swell. It really does. You start off in a room, and as you are wont to do in a twin stick roguelike, and you basically just go through the doors, get locked into a room with a shit ton of enemies, shoot the ever loving fuck out of them. And then the doors open up, and then you get to pick a path, go another room, and do it all over again until you find yourself against the boss. As you're blowing the fuck up out of things, sometimes you'll get weapon upgrades. Sometimes you'll get general core upgrades. I have completed this game, and I still don't understand the upgrade system that well.
Me neither. It was pretty confusing.
If I had to complain about anything, as far as Rush Rover goes, it's that there could stand to be a little more explanation. Hold my hand. And I feel like I complain about this a lot in Rattalaika games. Tutorials are our friends. And a little more explanation as to how the upgrade system works and what's necessary for it. Like, it would say, you unlock the core. And I'm like, cool, what do I do with it? I don't know. All I know is, like, I managed to beat a handful of bosses. I was rolling through it like I was the biggest badass to ever see the light of day. I had a really cool weapon that was, like, throwing out these boomerang ninja blades that were just spinning and dashing through everything. And I was like, I am a beast.
I was going to say, the beam gun was, like, super OP.
I don't know if I got the beam gun.
Oh my god, it was just like a straight laser beam, and it because they have aim assist in the game, if you just point it kind of in the direction where the enemy is,
it just locks on.
It would just lock on and just zap its life completely. It was super OP, the beam gun. I loved it.
The right kind of upgrades, like you could, I had at one point the laser gun, and I had a Gatling gun at the same time, and so I could use them both. And I was just like, this is unnecessary, but it's fantastic. Not even a little bit mad at it.
It's unnecessary.
You know, like, you don't need to be able to just, like, mow through everything in a room, but you can, and it's good.
Mm-hmm.
Double bonus points to the devs here. Thank you for the fast travel.
Yeah.
You move kind of slow, and the rooms are quite large, but every one of them has a transfer cube in it. So you can just, like, warp around from room to room. And there were times where, as it gets more difficult, I'd actually take a few hits and lose a little bit of my armor, and I'd be able just to warp back to a room that had armor. Plus, the map actually shows where you've left things at. There's no indicators. There's no legend. You don't know what the fuck that is till you get back to it. Although, once you start to play it enough, you start to realize, oh, that's this kind of weapon that I left behind. Or, oh, that's, you know, armor or whatever. At least the armor is green and sticks out like a sore thumb. So you can see it on the map pretty easily. But it's such a simple concept, but they've put in so many little quality of life adjustments to it that even some of the bigger twin stick shooter titles that we review don't have. Like, the fast traveling and having a map showing where all your items are on the map, I've bitched about those things so many times that if you told me that a little $6 Adelaide game was going to have it, I'd be like, yeah, okay.
$6? It's only $5. What are you talking about?
Okay, well, I rounded up for tax. Oh, okay. You know, taxes. But yeah, I mean, if you had told me that the a game like Rush Rover was going to have those kind of quality of life improvements, I would have been like, you're full of shit. But no, I am here. I'm right here right now to tell you, they have those quality of life improvements. Fucking hooray.
And of course, it's a Rattlake game. We can't mention Rattlake without talking about the achievements.
It's a quick completion. You only need to beat the first level. That's it. Probably going to take you a couple tries. I can't tell, again, because of the nature of the upgrade system, I have no idea if I was getting permanent upgrades or not. I don't know if anything was actually carrying over from run to run. It didn't seem like it to me.
Yeah, I don't think so.
It was just that on a couple of runs later on, I lucked out and got really good combos of shit and was able to do some damage. Overall, you only need to beat the first boss if you really don't want to do the rest of the game. And there is another mode. Now, the normal arcade mode is essentially like a blitz, and like it times you as you get through the levels. Although there aren't any achievements for those times. Like, it doesn't give a fuck how long it actually takes you. So the only thing it wants you to do is like get through rooms unscathed. That might be the most difficult thing that you have to do. And that's literally don't take any damage in a room. In a room. You can go to the next room, get fucked, it doesn't care. Keep going.
Well, there are achievements to get 5 blitzes and 5 unscathed in one playthrough. So you do have to play smart.
But it doesn't have to be in a row. Like, if you get fucked up in one room, you can go to the next one. And you still keep going as long as you don't die.
Yeah.
Beyond that, though, there is also a dodge mode where they literally strip you of all of your offensive abilities. And it's just a bullet hell. And your goal is to not get hit. And this is where time does matter. The longer you survive, the better off you're going to be. Because that's all you can do is just constantly dodge around and avoid the bullets from the enemy. There is no actual fighting back in that one. Not necessarily the most enjoyable mode. I like to be able to shoot back. It's kind of my strong suit. But I think it was kind of nice to take a break and go do that and then go back to the other one if I was having trouble.
No.
If I was having trouble. But otherwise, you're just going to go play it a couple times and get the achievements and be like, oh, that was the thing I did. Let's go back and pew pew. It's fine.
Well, then $5 on it. What do you think?
Give it a buy it. I think it's one of the more solid little twin stick roguelikes that we've had come out in a while. It's not something that's like going to blow your mind and be the most incredible twin stick roguelike narrative experience you've ever had. But you know, for its price, you can sit back, you know, kick your feet up and blast away at some machines for a little while.
Yeah, it's $5 and it's fun, so might as well.
Yeah.
All right, next game is called Zed, developed and published by Ground Control Studios, released April 16th on the Switch for $3.25. Zed is an instant classic puzzle game based on a simple mechanic. It builds onto increasingly complex puzzles that challenge you to a level you would not imagine. No timers, no clocks, no stars, and no tricks, just pure puzzles for you to enjoy. It's the perfect brain teaser that lets you train focus, concentration, and memory. Purnell, tell us about Zed.
We already named the best part of the game. No stars, no clock. Damn it. I was going to say exactly that. But I can at least tell you what the game is. That's good. So this game is actually, I just kind of spoil my take on it. This is already going to be up there with the alongside games like not quite Sudoku, because it's not as complicated as Sudoku, but it has that same feeling of just like general Zen, like, you know, thinking and puzzle solving before bed type interaction. So the idea behind this game is that you are playing on a grid of squares. The size varies per level. And each square, like there's a couple of those squares that actually have numbers embedded in them, along with one white square. Now, the goal of the game is to get any, let's just say what the actual numbers mean on the squares. So if you go to a square with a number, let's say the square has a number 3 on it, and then you click A on it, you can then extend that block out in any of the 4 cardinal directions, the number of squares, the number that's on that square. So if it has a number 3 on it, you can send it up 3 up, 3 down, 3 right, or 3 left. Same for any ones like 1, 2, 3, or whatever. Now, the goal is to get any of your squares to touch the one white square that exists somewhere on the map. Now, here's the rub. You will never have a level where the number can just immediately reach that square, except for the tutorial stage, which means there's got to be one other thing you can do to get a square to touch if it doesn't count far enough over. And what you have to do is make the square, make your block leapfrog. So let's say there's a block with the number 3 on it. I mentioned earlier that if you push the button, then you can extend it 3 blocks in any direction. Now, let's say there was another block that you extended in front of one of those pathways. So it was blocking the path. Now you would go the same number over, but you would also skip over whatever block has already been filled in. So you could take a 3 block or 3 extend and make it go 4 over or 5 over, as long as you can get other blocks to occupy space within the initial, you know, block line that it would have taken up. So the goal of the game is to maneuver and utilize all of the blocks that are on the level to make it so that you can get one of them to reach the center. So you're trying to move blocks over so that they intersect with other pathways so you can make the block that you want to reach out go farther, possibly intersect with another block line to make it go farther, and then ultimately clear the stage. Did that make any sense to you?
Yes, because I'm looking at pictures of it, and it looks tough, but it looks like it makes sense once you play through tutorials and it kind of guides you through what you're doing.
It is. That's exactly right, because honestly, to me, the game itself is legitimately fairly simple. Like, it's the challenge is it's weird. So a lot of, to give you some perspective, I got to level 43. I also won't use hints. Screw that. There's no clock and there's no stars. To use a hint is to reduce the value of the game for me at this point. I didn't get to that point where it's like, I can't do this. So no hints, but they are there if people want to use them. Now, early on, the game feels fairly simple because even though you are trying to reach the goal, there's usually only one block that can actually get there, because the only block that is actually, you know, horizontal or parallel to the goal block. So, you know, at least at that point, I have to make the blocks work together in a way to get this one to touch the goal. Easy peasy. It's later on in the game we start saying, you know, you seem to understand this now. So now we're going to make it so it looks like multiple blocks can possibly reach the goal, but which one is the one you need to get there? So now you're trying to decipher which of the blocks you shoot has the best chance of making it if you maneuver the pieces properly. So you'll be kind of torn there. But one thing that does help also is there's like a nice like undo, not be confused with reset, which is also there, but an undo. So you can just undo the last move you made, and you can go back as many moves as you need to, so that even though trial and error is a thing, don't do it. Because one, you're just kind of ruining the game, and two, that'll end up being a lot of permutations you're screwing up and redoing. But by virtue of the fact that the undo function does exist in the way that it does, it's not hard for you to, like, say, retrace 3 steps back because you realize you finally screwed up, but you also don't want to start an entire level over. It makes it easier for you to kind of use deductive reasoning to come to a conclusion on how this level needs to be solved. And again, it kind of results in a nice little zen state, because nothing is permanent, nothing is being timed, nothing is being graded. It's just, can you do it or can you not? And frankly, I like that kind of thing on my puzzle games where I can just kind of zone out and just eventually figure it out. Or, heaven forbid, put the game down, come back later, and all of a sudden I had an epiphany. That's what I should have done here. Honestly, especially for the price, I think it's very much worth a person's money. I've gotten $3.49 worth out of this and then some already. It's a quality title for a puzzler. I should also state, I mentioned earlier, I got to like level 40, that's like 44, 45. There are 5 puzzle packs. each puzzle pack has 20 levels in it. So I got about almost halfway through the game without using any hints. Again,
how hard is it now?
I'm on a level now that is kicking the crap out of it. Let me boot this up real quick. Wait a second. Okay, I'm on 42. Okay, now it's just a bunch of ones going around in a square pattern, and the goal is in the center, and it is driving me nuts right now. I won't use a hint. Screw that noise, but it is kicking my butt, and I'm going to figure it out before I go to bed tonight. So it's very doable. I mean, even if I stopped right now because I was like, I quit, I can't do it, it's too much, I still saw 41 levels.
For $3.
For $3, yeah. I think it was quality. I had fun with those 43 levels, too, or those 41 levels. So I think it is a solid game.
Well, then 325, what is your verdict?
I don't even want to give it a fucking one. I want to straight up say buy. It's worth the money if you get down with like Zen Puzzlers.
Awesome. I got to pick this one up myself. It looks really, really interesting. I can't wait for it to release. We're obviously recording the review a couple days before it comes out, but by the time the episode's out, the game is out, and you will be able to pick it up, and I'm going to have to grab this one for $3.
I don't think you'll go wrong. I think you'll enjoy it.
Awesome. All right. Well, we got one last game for the party cast to talk about. That is called Kawaii Dethu Desu, developed by Pippin Games and Top Hat Studios, published by East Asia Soft, released April 16th on the Switch for $4.99. In Kawaii Dethu Desu, supernatural beings find themselves incarnated as cute Japanese idols, pick a supernatural idol and beat the hell out of, no pun intended, as many overzealous fans as you can in this addictive beat 'em up as you work your way up to claim the throne of the underworld. Get it? Beat the hell out of things in the underworld. Get it?
Yeah, get it.
Hell.
Huh?
Hell.
Oh, yeah, yeah, hell.
Yeah.
That's where demons are from.
Yeah. So, Chris, tell us about this one.
Okay, so for one, they're calling it addicting, and I'm like thinking about how like I'm technically addicted to my job because I'm addicted to like, you know, food and shelter. Like, just because the game makes you play it forever does not mean that it's anyway. I also have a beef with the description of the last game because I hate the word instant classic. I hate when things call themselves
classic. They kind of shorten it for coolness.
Oh, yeah, that's okay. Yeah, as long as it's not instant classic. Insta classic is all right. Okay, so, and by the way, I have been playing this game the entire episode, and I did unlock a character in the interim.
Nice. So,
yeah. Okay, so Kawaii Death Desu. So this is basically a game that kind of made me think a lot about how, like, if you have a game that's largely just about doing a simple thing for points and using those points for unlockables, you can pretty much make whatever you want into a game and have it be, like, you know, something that somebody's going to play forever as long as, you know, they want to do the thing. And this is like the, you know, like the free-to-play games, how they do, except with real-world money, you know?
Yeah.
But, because, yeah, the entire gameplay of this thing is that you have a cute girl who is actually a monster of some kind. The starter is a Grim Reaper who is also a cute, like, sort of, what do they call it? Moe type of girl. Like, you know, cute and dressed as if she is underaged, but she's, like, you know, barely not. that kind of thing, which is a huge thing in Japan. Anyways, so this, you know, you stand in the center of a stage with the crowd going wild, and people are running up onto the stage endlessly, and you push either the left trigger and the bumper, rather, not the trigger. The trigger would be better, but no, either the left bumper or the right bumper. Left bumper attacks left, right bumper attacks right. And you just basically clear out waves of adoring fans, quote unquote, just basically people running at you until the timer runs out, and then you're done. There's another thing at the bottom of the screen that, like, as you are collecting quote unquote souls, because, you know, you're basically slicing people in half, so with a giant scythe, so, you know, of course their souls are going into hell, and when that chart goes up, then you get a temporary boosted power up, which basically makes your scythe like three times the size, and you can, you know, of course, handle them much better at that point. And so you do this, and whether you win or lose, you you retain all of the points that you got. There's more than one point. It's not like one person equals one point. There's, you know, some characters are worth more than others. And then once you are, you know, done with Death Chan, which is her name, you can then unlock Emmy. And Emmy looks like a, you know, like a hip hop kind of girl, like with a baseball cap and like, you know, the jacket tied around the waist type of thing. And she's actually a zombie. So when you start the game with her, and when she's actually attacking, she turns green and her eyeball starts hanging out. And then, you know, she goes back to normal. And, you know, you can attack with her. Her attacks are a little quicker. But honestly, like, I've unlocked five characters now at this point, and that is no small feat. I'll tell you about that in a second. But each character just has a variation on the same theme. It's just attack left and attack right. And the only thing that really sets them apart is their superpower, which is usually, like, takes care of the entire one side or the other. Emmy's is actually kind of great because she... you know, a graveyard appears before her, and like every time you push one side attack, a bunch of ghoulish hands come out of the graves and like grab at people, and it clears them instantly. But yeah, so, you know, then you unlock a succubus, a fire demon, a vampire, and etc. Now the thing is about this game, like, you know, there's nothing wrong with it. The sprites are nice and colorful and, you know, really well animated. You know, the aesthetic is consistent. They're all girls. They're all monster tropes, and they're all anime tropes. And the like music is good. I feel like it could be a little more, because like, and the other thing is that like every single stage, because it's a concert, inexplicably, you know, you're killing people at a concert. I mean, I don't know how many careers have you know, have involved killing thousands of people on stage and they still pack the house, you know, like these people have killed more of their adoring fans than Donald Trump at this point.
Oh, gee.
Political joke. Oh yeah. We're controversial. No, but yeah, like they, you know, they killed so many people and they still keep running after them. Anyways, the point is that, you know, the game obviously wants you to keep playing it. So, it really, you know, the only thing about it to me is that, like, it takes so much to unlock the next thing. Like, you know, when you beat the first level at the normal difficulty, you end up with about 200 to 400 points. Well, it only takes, like, you know, I think it's like 1400 something. I don't know. Unlocking the next character is not so bad, but then the next character is about four times that much. You, like, you end up with like characters that you have to unlock at 24,000 points and things like that. Not only that, but there is a level up system that you have to utilize if you want to get into later levels. It's very easy. Like, you just go into their character, you know, screen, and then just push level up, and it costs you a certain amount of points. It goes from 400 to 800 to 3200 to I think it's 4800 just for the levels, just for one character, and you have to do it with each one.
Jeez.
And they all have you know, a default costume and three optional costume changes, each of which cost 5400. And that's purely aesthetic. Like, that's all there is to that. And, you know, but like, there's different cool things. Like, each character unlocks a different part of the soundtrack. You can look at art, although I'm not exactly sure how to unlock all the art. I mean, I guess it's just with, it comes with the costume changes, I think, is all it is. And, yeah, it's just like, there's just so much that you have to like unlock. But at the same time, it's like, you know, since each character kind of plays the same way, it's more or less just working up towards getting your favorite one and then just concentrating on them. Although there are achievements for killing a certain amount of fans with each character, like 3,500, 7,000, 11,000. And yes, I have reached 11,000 kills with one character within the time of this episode.
Damn.
Like, it's a character I unlocked and got 11,000 kills, you know, before I even started talking about the game. So like I said, lots of killing. So yeah, I think it's one of those things where it's like the gameplay of it is so simple. It's literally just one thing, But yeah, they do a good job of like keeping you engaged in the sense that, you know, you want to unlock that next character and you want to, you know, check out those costume changes, that art, all that good stuff. The only, you know, and like I said, I feel like the entry, the price point could be a little lower for how much you have to work for it. But yeah, as you clear higher levels, then the rewards do get a little bit more. I think the max I get per level now is like 2000. So it doesn't take. Yeah, it's not so much worse. But then my next character unlock is currently, 20,800.
Jeez.
And then I get to start the process of leveling them up because they always start in level one. And by the way, you know, the levels are important because like as the fans run onto the stage, they have little bars of health, and your level directly corresponds with how many of those bars you can take off at once. So three is a big chore because you can't attack enough to get a three bar, you know, character down while you're rushing you in a huge group. If you can only do one bar of damage, but once you can do three bars of damage, then it's easy. So there's a huge amount of benefit to gain from any level up at all, which is good. The only real complaint that I do have about this game, like that's a genuine complaint, is that there's, you know, and this goes, for two things, but one is that, you know, only the left and right bumper buttons, the top buttons, the bumpers, those are the only buttons that work in the game. Like, they didn't assign anything else. Like, you could do it with the stick, you could assign some face buttons. Like, my fingers were just getting too tired of, you know, by the time I was sitting here playing, like, round after round after round. Like, I would just kind of cross my eyes and just hit left, right, left, right, left, right, left, right, and that would, like, clear out enough of the hordes that I could just kind of grind out some points, and I'm like, you know, give me some easier buttons to work with here. There's so many more buttons.
Yeah.
Although that Switch update came out today where you can now assign any button, any like task. So maybe I could do it myself, but
there you go.
Yeah. But that also, creates a problem when it comes to the, two player mode, which it does have. It has a player versus player mode. Now, I was thinking that it would be a cool thing to like team up with a second player and like one side take one, you know, the left side, one, you know, character take the right side and just kind of work together. But no, it's split screen and you just both have to play through the same level. And, you know, the thing is that it only, according to the game, I mean, I don't have two pro controllers hooked up right now to like test it, but they, apparently you have to use the Joy-Cons. And what's the worst button on a Nintendo Joy-Con? The left and right buttons. And those are the only ways you can play through this game. So it's like, that's a worthless two-player mode if that's the only button that you get to use. Yeah. Like, those buttons are small enough that they could have had Y and A in there as a backup. But, so yeah, like, for that reason, I'm like, no two-player mode on this one.
Well, even with that negative only being $5, what do you think of it?
Oh yeah, $5, absolutely worth it. Like I said, the only thing is the controller, and that's, you know, that bothers me more than other people because I do tend to play these games a lot so I can unlock everything, and my wrists are just like feeling weird now because I'm only using my index fingers to like, you know, do the entire game. But again, I like the, I love the sprites, I love the animations. Like I said, it's doing absolutely as much as it can with the one thing that it does, and I appreciate that. And the music's good. Like I said, I like to listen to the new stage themes. But, you know, that's about it. $5. It's kind of like, as long as you like that one thing and you don't mind playing it enough to, you know, get the right character that you like and the right costume and whatever, then go for it. Anybody cool. else, I would say just don't buy it for the two-player mode.
All right, sounds good. Well, that is it for the party cast. We do have a little bit more show to go after this, but I'm going to let the three of you go. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having us
over. It was wonderful.
Does anyone have any final words before we move on?
Kawaii Desu, do your best cutesy impression, Chris. Or do that wacky voice again, the broke demon. There you go.
I have a 533 credit score.
All right, moving on. Jacob Garner's here. Jacob, how are you doing?
I'm good. I mean, it's been forever since I've been on the show.
I know. It's a whole new world now.
Yeah, unfortunately. And I mean, like, a lot has happened behind the scenes for the podcast too. You know, I mean, I don't know how much you've discussed it, because I mean, like, I really only listen to the podcast when I'm doing the tweets and the Facebook updates, which I've really done neither, mostly because, well, in case you've all missed it, my account has been suspended on Twitter.
On Twitter. That doesn't explain Facebook at all.
It doesn't. No, no. But yeah, like, somebody hacked my account on March 31st or April 1st, posted hundreds, if not like thousands, of shitty Ray-Ban spam tweets, and my account's been suspended since.
Nice.
And, you know, Twitter customer service is like non-existent. But meanwhile, like, the dumb idiots let Diamond and Lace, you know, they get their account locked out and suspended. And then, you know, 2 days later, they've got their account back again. So that's cool. That's cool. I guess that's the privilege of having verified accounts.
Yeah, pretty much. We're not verified because we're not cool.
Have you tried getting us a verified account?
I think it's an automatic thing.
I think you can apply for it, though.
But I think it's based on, like, how many followers you have, and I don't think we're big enough.
Yeah, no, we aren't. Well, Joe, I know you've been hearing that you're not big enough your whole life, but,
yeah,
you know, that's fair.
Yeah, I have a small dick.
In case our listeners couldn't figure out where the joke was going.
Oh, my God, what is our problem? Anyway, you got a game to talk about.
Okay.
No, well, go ahead.
No, because, I mean, like, you know, I thought it would be fun for the viewers, the listeners to hear more about, like, the going on behind the scenes shit, because we never actually have discussed, like, the first attempt at, you know, doing an ad.
Oh, no, you know? we never talked about that.
Yeah, and all the shenanigans that went on behind that. So, listeners, if you remember, we posted a meme, famously about a GameStop orgy and some manager who got fired for it. And unbeknownst to us, like, it blew up. It ended up getting like 36,000 shares, which, you know, we're lucky if any of our memes get shared like twice. So, yeah. It was really unexpected. And I, like, you know, I go to Joe and I'm like, oh, well, you know, we should probably strike while the iron's hot and see, like, you know, if we could do anything about this. And, like, so I used all of $10, you know, because that's all we're willing to have for a marketing budget. I used 10 of my own dollars to see if we could, you know, gain any kind of traction. And so I was like, Joe, all right, you know, give me a post that, you know, so we have, like, so we're promoting original content. You know, give me a post that, or a podcast episode. And I forget which one exactly it was. But we targeted people in the United States who were between the ages of 18 and 40, like video games, like Sega, classic video games, retro video games. And I think there was like two other outliers, and Facebook is like, oh yeah, with $10, you can reach, like, I think they said that we were going to reach like 30,000 people. And I'm like, oh shit. Okay. Okay. That sounds great. We reached, the numbers, like, per day were like 150, 200. I mean, I think we got, like, I think we actually got like 15 likes out of the whole thing. But we also got like one guy who was like irate that we showed up in his feed because he doesn't understand how sponsored ads work. So he and Purnell kept going back and forth. And then I don't know if, did you block him or did he just stop responding?
I guess he stopped responding because I completely missed out on all this. I have the new Facebook and it doesn't even let me check, like, notifications for the page anymore. It's like, this is not prepared for the new Facebook yet. I'm like, well, thanks for fucking shoving new Facebook on me and I can't check my notifications.
You can switch back to the old format.
I'll have to do that.
Okay. But yeah, so I was just, so at the end of it, I think we reached like 500 600 people total, even though Facebook was gave us like this completely bonkers number of what they said we could reach. So that was our first, probably not our last time ever trying a Facebook ad. Like, I want to give it another go at some point. Perhaps like a milestone episode. Like, what are we at right now?
This is 571.
Okay. So maybe like episode 600, I figure like maybe episode 600, we'll try again, and this time we'll throw like $15. It's an anniversary special. We got to show that we're big spenders. And also the other thing is that like our outliers that I used were like complete shit. Like in retrospect, I should have put up more than like 7 demographics that we were trying to reach.
No, that's why you're the social media manager.
Yeah, and thank God that this is a volunteer gig and not like a paid gig, because I'm pretty sure I would have been out on the street.
Oh, big by time. Now. Big time.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank
How
you,
dare Joe. You make thank me you. Tweet my own tweets?
Shit.
But yeah, you do have a game to talk about. We got to get to that. Next game to talk about tonight is called Sinker, developed and published by Waller Digital, released April 17th on Xbox One for $4.99. Sinker is a minimalist puzzler. There's just you, hooks, pucks, and various contraptions you need to finish each level. Sink all the pucks to advance. Jacob, tell us about Sinker.
So, I mean... The funny thing is that it is a minimalist puzzle game, and the description that you gave is pretty much all you really need to know about the game. So, I mean, it's even the description, which feels very minimalist in itself. It's pretty much like think of it as the idea of one of Joe's own self orgies at his house. No holes are going to be left unfilled, ideally.
Oh God.
You're like, our sponsors are going to hate this. All right,
our apologies to Waller Digital.
We'll try to edit it out later.
No, I'm too lazy.
Okay, so anyway, so pretty much you have these like little pucks that have to go into these holes in different areas on the grid. And you have to use these hooks that can pretty much, like, unless there's something else like hooked to it, like another hook, the hooks only move in one direction. And so you really end up having to like plan out your moves and stuff like that. And one of the interesting things I found out like about it is that it's just like there's a lot of trial and error. So you will get your time and money's worth out of it, especially since it's only $4.99. But one of the nice things I found about it is that it's just like there were some of the puzzles that like they drove me absolutely up the wall. You know, I'd like fail at it like 30, 40 times. And then, like, I'd be like, fuck this game, and then the next day I'd wake up, boom, get it right on the first try, and then it's you just keep having these aha moments with the game. And it's just like, oh yeah, no shit, that was totally easy. Why didn't I think of this last time? And it's just, as the description, says, it's very minimalist. Like, there's no flashy lights. They're like the background. There's not much to it. The music is this ambient, minimalist music. Like, I honestly forgot that there is a soundtrack to it. And it's just, yeah, you're just trying to get the pucks into the hole. That's it. Like, it doesn't do any hand holding. It introduces new mechanics slowly and ramps up the difficulty accordingly. But yeah, it's a fun little game. I'd recommend it, especially at the $5 price point. I was checking what it costs on Steam before this review, just so I had like something to compare to, because I was also thinking about the game, because part of the problem with me getting these games is that like unless I log out of the Xbox site, which I'm way too lazy to do, I have no way of seeing what the price is. And so
you
I was just like,
"You can ask me,
Joe." I don't. That involves talking to you.
True point.
I don't want to. So anyway, oh crap! What was I going to say? We were talking about price. Yeah, just so I had something to compare it to. And because I did have the fears of, like, you know, sometimes we're on the show and then you're like, oh, well, it costs $10. And I'm like, like, I like the game, but I didn't like it that much. But for $5, yeah, totally. Absolutely. It's a fun game. And it's a nice casual game, too, that, like, you could just pick up and play. And yeah, then
I like
let it go.
Crane game on daisy chains.
Fair. Yeah, I mean, that's a pretty fair assessment.
Yeah, it's a fun game, though. I played a nice chunk of it as well. You're right, it does introduce new mechanics slowly, and it eases you into things, but at the same time, the difficulty ramps up just perfectly enough that you don't want to quit playing.
Yeah, and it's not like break your controller, you know, difficult.
No,
like,
it's sit there and contemplate difficult.
Yeah, or it's just like, you know, you quit, you return to it 2 days later, and then you solve it on the first try.
Yeah,
you know,
that's how all puzzle games are, though.
Not all. Well, yeah, most.
Yeah.
So.
Well, your official verdict at $5.
Yeah, totally. Absolutely, I highly recommend it.
Cool. All right. Well, Jacob, always a pleasure having you on. Do you have any final words?
Crap. You know, you'd think like me being gone for so long, I would have more to say, but like aside from talking about like the recent Xbox sale, I don't really got much.
All right, and finally tonight we've got our good friend Tim Ekibis joining. Tim, how are you doing?
Oh, I'm wonderful. I am great. we're a solid
month.
You're
really selling it. You're really selling that you're doing great.
This is me hot off my, you know, 12, 13 hour day watching my 4-year-old and not being able to take him anywhere that is public. So that's what you're getting today on the SML podcast.
That's about all the effort that we really deserve.
Yeah. All we need, we'll make it across the finish line here tonight. I'm sure I don't know, man, like the last episode before this one was like 90 minutes long. I was like, what the fuck is that? Like, I know Purnell wasn't on it, but come on. Like,
hey, sometimes we get shorter episodes. It just happens that way.
Like, wow, it wasn't 3.5 hours long. Holy shit. Didn't know it was possible. But
hey, we try.
I don't know. Game releases slowing down or getting delayed or who knows what because of the virus. You know, yeah, Last of Us got delayed, and I'm sure several more games are going to be getting delayed sooner than later.
Yeah, Wasteland got delayed. I remember that one being one that got held up.
Yeah. But, yeah, it's, I don't know, the whole thing. It's still weird. It's been a solid month since I've been home and not going to work.
WrestleMania happened. We never had a WrestleCast.
No, we didn't do a WrestleCast, and that was mostly on me lacking any enthusiasm for that. Like, I wanted them to just cancel WrestleMania. Like I've not been watching much wrestling in the last month since they started having the empty arena shows. Even though, like, I know that, you know, AEW's still been putting on good matches and there's been some good stuff to watch on WWE. It's just weird. I also weirdly don't have a lot of time. Like, I don't have that time because I don't stream video during the day because I don't want to clog up the internet because my wife needs it to work. Otherwise, yeah. So I don't know. I haven't really been watching much, but I was like, I wish they had just canceled WrestleMania. This thing sounds like it's going to be a fucking mess. They pre-taped everything. You know, like, all the matches got changed. The tag team match turned into a triple threat singles match. they're doing, yeah. And it was just like, what is going on? This is gonna suck. And I just my heart was not in the WrestleCast this time around. Cause I was just like, I don't even fucking know. It ended up being halfway decent. in the end, there ended up being some good matches, and some incredible other stuff. I definitely, so I guess the tag title, the three-way tag match, ladder match, was amazing, was incredible, was insane, considering there was no
audience. They were performing for nobody. They were
performing for nobody, but that was probably the best match. Well, it was probably the best match across two nights. Like, Charlotte Rhea Ripley was a good match, even if I could deal without Charlotte winning.
Yeah.
Again, always, I could deal without Charlotte winning at WrestleMania. But
it's like a running theme.
I'm just like, oh man, hot new NXT person coming up, gonna lose to Charlotte. Or in this case, Becky as well. And that was the shittiest match. The freaking Shayna Becky match. I was just like, okay, whatever, I guess. I mean, the things that I think people, and I enjoyed the Kevin Owens Seth Rollins match. I enjoyed that as well. I thought they did a good job. And there was other matches that I enjoyed. I enjoyed the first night more than the second night. The Randy Orton Edge match kind of put me to sleep. Their half hour meander around hit each other with things match. I hate last man standing matches anyways. And yeah, that was like, okay. But the Boneyard match and the Firefly Funhouse match were great and incredible.
Yeah, those were pretty fantastic. The Boneyard match I loved. I'm going to hate rewatching it when they remove all the Metallica.
Oh, that's true. Well, it was just when Undertaker was coming and going, so whatever. But that was a great use of the Undertaker, kind of underbiker coming back. And just that's how I want to see Undertaker from now on. Like, not this like sad old dude in the ring who can't really move, who's totally blown up before, you know, 10 minutes into the match and looks like shit. Like, has not looked great in the ring since, like, the fuck, is my child upstairs being an asshole? I don't know what's going on. It's like, I mean, yeah, like, WrestleMania 30, he was looking pretty rough, and that was a long time ago, but you shoot him a match in a Boneyard, and he can look great and awesome and badass and be, you know, all that ridiculous stuff can happen, and he can have fucking kung fu fights with druids, and set off his pyro and lasers and stuff, and it was great. It was wonderful. And then the Firefly Funhouse was just this like insane cinematic, like multi-layered deconstruction of John Cena that was just like just fucking incredible. I love that. That was,
yeah, a lot of people, that seems to be a love it or hate it kind of match. I loved it. I thought it was really creative. I thought it was really unique. I loved the twists that they took with it and the symbolism that they had, especially with the NWO and that being like, what if John Cena did turn heel? He could have been as big as the NWO.
But Hollywood John Cena.
Should have happened.
Yeah, could have happened.
Could still happen. Could still happen.
Did it happen? It happened in his mind. John Cena gave in and turned heel, gave into the darkness and let in the Fiend. Yeah, I mean, I guess, you know, people, if you didn't like it, you just wanted a match, I guess. But I would not want to see that all the time. I think it was a pretty special occasion, just given the world circumstances, given the characters that were involved and the history of John Cena. Like, it set a unique stage to do something crazy like that.
And it worked.
Like, yes, I think it worked beautifully. Like, I don't think they should be hauling Braun Strowman into the Firefly Funhouse. I don't think that would work so well. Speaking of Braun Strowman, yeah, he won fucking beat Goldberg, won the Universal title because Roman Reigns is staying in his house, as he should,
yeah,
for the next few months. And the hell is going on upstairs? I forgot we got a review to do. And Drew won, and I felt sad that he had to do it in front of no people.
And then on Monday, they had another match that happened at WrestleMania that was immediately after WrestleMania.
Secret main event. Whatever, I guess. Made people really scared that Big Show, who had his Netflix sitcom dropping, was going to win the title.
Dude, I was so scared. When that music hit, I was like, Jesus, no. Please, no.
Yeah.
Oh, God, no. God, no. Why? Why? Yeah. Why?
Yeah, I was just confused. I was like, oh, that's not a bad main event for the Raw after WrestleMania in an empty arena. And then I was like, oh, wait, they were depicting it as like this extra thing that happened at WrestleMania? What?
They should have just treated it as this happened Monday.
I don't know. I don't know. It's whatever. weird cherry on top of the weird Sunday that was WrestleMania. But now we're headed to empty Money in the Bank. As empty as that briefcase.
No, there is a contract in that briefcase, sir.
They're an essential business in Florida.
Yeah, they are.
As declared by the state after Linda McMahon's super PAC gave like $18 million to the state of Florida, they can stay open. And, that's weird.
Damn. Crazy how that happens.
Anyways.
Anyways, we've got a game to talk about. Should we do that?
We should do that.
All right. Final game to talk about tonight is called Galaxy Warfighter, developed by Qplays, published by Joybits. It released April 16th on the Switch and PC for $6.99. Taking its roots from the classic games in the shoot 'em up genre, Galaxy Warfighter conveys the old ideas in a new way. Piloting your fighter ship, you have to fight hordes of enemies with unpredictable strategies and attack schemes. Tim, okay. Tell us about Galaxy Warfighter.
Oh, my God. The hell? No. Old school gameplay in new ways, in ways that make me go, was this a phone game? Is this a phone game right now? Because it feels like a phone game. The way this game works, it auto fires, it auto shoots. You just have to, you literally can play this game one handed until you unlock a couple of power ups later on, and then you do have to use another button. And that was the first thing that made me go like, oh, is this a phone game? It's just because you don't have to push a button to shoot. Is it one of those things where it just auto fires and you're just supposed to use your finger to move the ship around? It's not. No, this is developed for PC and Switch. So, okay. So, yeah, it's a horizontal scrolling shooter. What a lovely genre. I love it. You love it. Many folks love it. An old school genre doesn't get enough love. But seemingly, you shoot your way through these levels that are seemingly, at least to me, procedurally generated. Like they're feeding in like kind of these same, there's like a certain number of enemies and enemy types and wave types that they just like throw at you. And like the bosses, you know, there'll be a boss at the end of each level that will be, you know, not unique. There was one string of levels where I ran into the same boss three times in a row. With like slight variations, and I was like, okay, all right, what's going on here? So there will be like small power-ups that kind of will pop up through the levels, like little bombs, or you'll get like a shooter, you know, like a laser power-up or whatever. There's a few power-ups that drop in the levels, but they're temporary or instant in some cases. What you're mostly doing is every enemy you shoot drops a big shiny coin dollar, and you pick those up, and then not even between levels, but when you die, if you go back to the main menu of the game, you can use that currency to permanently upgrade your ship. And man, does it take a long time to do that? Like it will take it'll take probably like a couple levels to get like the first tier of upgrades, and then maybe a little more than that, because as you buy, it's like I upgrade my shot. Then the next level of it becomes more expensive. And it doesn't really seem like the enemies start dropping more money as you go. So it ends up being very grindy, which was the second thing that made me go, is this a phone game? Is this a phone game port? Is this the type of thing where on the phone they're like, oh yeah, just drop in $10 and you'll get, you know, 10,000 in-game currency so you can upgrade your ship super fast and start flying through levels or something like that. That's what it felt like to me. So when they say like an old school shoot 'em up in a new way, that's kind of the way that it plays out. It's like, what if you had an old school shooter that played like a phone game except on a PC and console? Do you want that? Probably not. I don't. It's just like it ends up being real. Just it's super grindy and it's super just boring. Like stage after stage after stage, you are fighting the same enemies over and over and over again. Like the level fires up, the same goddamn background music starts playing, the same, you know, three or four enemy types start waving in, and you get to the end and you fight like one of the handful of bosses, and then you go on to the next stage and you just keep doing that, and you're just, yeah, I'm playing the game with one handed, just moving my ship around. I don't gotta, you know, I'm not pushing a button. Eventually there are power-ups you can buy that will require the use of a button to activate them. But that's what you're doing, and it's just really boring. It's really just so grindy. Like, if your currency amassed faster, you could make, like, even if, like, you got currency faster and you could power up your ship faster, you're still shooting through the same stuff level after level after level after level after level after level with the same music level after level after level after level. There's, like, nothing. The backgrounds do change, like, and, you know, it's just kind of like a flat 2D background, like, that will change from level to level, but it's not like you would not be able to look at level and be like, oh yeah, that's level 9. Oh yeah, that's level 15. Like, no, it all runs together. Nothing stands out from anything else. And your ship upgrades really slowly too. Like, even when you just, like, when you buy, you cash in for one of those power-ups, it's like, oh, instead of shooting out like one shot, I shoot out two shots and I can barely tell. And like, oh, now I have a satellite that shoots with me, so now I have three shots that come out. And it's just like, it doesn't really, you're not like making big strides when you're powering up your ship. It's just the whole thing. I'm just like, it just, I don't know why, like, I just don't know why you, it's just not interesting or fun to play. It's such a drag. It's no good. It's just not good.
Damn. That's a bummer. What would you do to fix the game? Obviously, make money drop quicker, more variety in enemy types and in music. What else?
Yeah, that's it. Like, everything. I'll say the art on the ships, like, looks fine, like, nice and clean, but their patterns need to be more engaging. Like, there needs to be more enemies. There needs to be more to distinguish one level from another. There needs to be more music, better backgrounds, like the whole nine yards. It just seems like it needs way more work and variety to it to, like, really being like it at the least, like, pop up the power up menu between levels. So I don't have to go back to the menu and then go back in. It does, like, checkpoint your levels. You don't have to start over from the beginning every time.
That's good.
But, like, that is something, though you wouldn't know level 1 from level 20 or whatever. You wouldn't know. It's just a grind. It's just too grind. It's just for a game that seems to be built for, you know, a console or PC sit down experience. It is just way too much of a mindless grind. Like, if you're looking for a shooter to play while listening to podcasts, I guess maybe. But, you know, it just, the whole package strikes me as like, oh, this is a shooter. This is the type of game that I might pull out on my phone to, like, play through a few levels just mindlessly while I'm, you know, what people do when they're playing phone games. Yeah. Yeah. Pooping.
Yeah. I was going to say it, but I didn't want to.
You know, we all want to say it.
Poop.
Poop.
Oh, man. All right. So $7 on this one. What are you thinking?
No, thank you. Don't. No. Deny, unless, like, some severe and significant updates start coming through.
Which, if Q Plays and Joybits push out any updates, let us know. We're more than happy to give the game another look.
Holler at you, boy. But as of right now, nah, there's better shooters out there. Lots of them.
All right. Well, Tim, thank you as always for being here and keeping us company. Thanks to everyone else who was here and did their part earlier in the show. I don't know if it's been long or short, so I guess we'll find out when it's all said and done.
We don't know, because we haven't recorded the party cast part. Pernell hasn't been on yet.
Pernell hasn't been here, so we have plenty of time.
It's probably going to be a long one. Look out. Oh.
Tim, do you have any final words to end the show?
No, I got to go find out what chaos has been going on upstairs in my house while I was down here recording. I just heard lots of human feet running around and for too long, so I don't know what he was up to.
It's going to be a disaster, isn't it?
Maybe. We'll see. We'll find out.